Film noir lives on and on since its heyday in the 40s and 50s. The Seattle International Film Festival's Noir City event, one of several film noir festivals in Seattle, kicks off tonight.
Mr. Roman, could I ask you a very personal question?
Yes, of course.
What is your business, really?
Gino, what business would you say we were in, really?
No, I'd say the amusement business.
The amusement business?
Yes, strictly for laughs.
Not like killing him exactly. Or just not saving him.
This is the biggest story that ever hit this town. You're doing a great job.
Oh, hell no. We can't pre-condemn these men the way we've been doing.
You're crazy. No matter how you figure it, Tyler and his partner killed that boy in cold blood. Whatever they get, they deserve.
Now, it's wrong. I've been wrong. We can't do to them what they did to Donald Miller.
A montage of clips from The Chase, Inferno, and Try and Get Me, just three of the films that are part of the SIFF Festival's Noir City event, curated by self-described Czar of Noir. Is it self-described or someone call you that?
No, someone called me that at one point, yes. But my dad was a sports writer, so I knew when they give you a nickname, keep it, right? So there was a woman, her name was Laura Shepherd, and she was the event coordinator of the Mechanics Institute Library in San Francisco, and I was presenting a film, and that just popped out. The Czar of Noir.
And it totally works.
There you go.
And you can't see Eddie Muller, so you can't see his suit that's on and the handkerchief tucked into the thing and the great cufflinks he's got on. So and the hat, oh my goodness, he totally is the part.
I like when you say the suit is on. Thank goodness. It is radio. It doesn't have to be on.
It didn't have to be on, but he could have been in jeans and a T-shirt, but he dresses the part. Eddie is the founder and president of the Film Noir Foundation. He himself is a writer, a filmmaker, and a historian of noir. His books include Dark City, The Lost World of Film Noir. It's French for black film.
Correct.
But it was not called that at first, was it? The name came after the films?
As far as I know, the earliest use of the term was in about 1946.
Pretty early in France,
obviously. Yeah. You know, the American films were embargoed, obviously, in Europe during the war. And, you know, the French are the most cinema crazy people on earth. And the fact that during the Nazi occupation they could not get American films was probably the most crushing blow of the war to them. And then to celebrate the liberation, there was a 365-day festival of films that they could not get in Paris during the war. And that's when some very astute film critics in Paris noted the difference in Hollywood films that had happened, you know, while they weren't looking, while the war was going on. And so a critic named Nino Frank was the first one to say, you know, we noticed this change to the, you know, film noir, where Hollywood had always meant, you know, happily ever after. And, you know, the solution to everyone's problems was revealed at the end of the film. Now there were these movies where that didn't happen. And it was the possibility of a bad ending existed. And this represented a fairly significant change. And, of course, what's interesting is that a lot of the filmmakers who were responsible for that change were Europeans who had fled Europe with the rise of the Nazis and were now working in Hollywood. So it's kind of a cycle there, a regenerative creative cycle that was happening.
Does that literally dark view that comes across in so many film noir films appeal more at different times in history? Does it sometimes can people relate to it more easily? Like I think of the post-war period as the atomic bomb, and perhaps people were drawn to that because of what had gone on at the time. And it's also a counterpoint to the happy world of the 1950s. I wonder if it works better in certain times.
You know, a lot of scholarly work has been done trying to prove that point.
Yeah.
But I also think it overlooks some very practical things, which, you know, I believe one of the reasons that film noir existed when it did is because it was time for the American culture to grow up. And it really had less to do with what were the cultural factors of the time that suddenly made people want to see these movies, as much as it was the makers themselves becoming free of the shackles of, you know, we have to do this because we're making films to brighten the public's outlook during the Great Depression. Now we're making films to aid in the war effort. Well, now the war was over, and quite honestly, there were a lot of artists who were champing at the bit to just produce more adult, entertaining films. You know, it's like, well, this is an area where we couldn't go before, and now we can go there. And as much as there being social factors that led to the films being made, there were artistic ones as well, which is just you tell a writer you can't write that story. They just want to write it all the more, right? So that's in many cases, I think that's what was happening with film noir. They just could not wait to have the perfect storm, if you will, that allowed them to finally tell these stories.
How does film noir echo today, like in the last 5 years, films that maybe at least did a nod to film noir or directly influenced by that period of filmmaking?
You know, it's funny. I should be more prepared to answer this question because it's a significant question, and it's one that, you know, bears examination. One of the problems that I have is that my scope of film history is such that I think of things like Chinatown and L.A. Confidential as like new movies.
Yeah.
And it's like, really, it's 50, going on 50 years old now or something, you know. And, Chinatown is what, almost 40 years old?
That's true, yeah.
Now. Next year will be the 40th anniversary of Chinatown.
Mm-hmm. But L.A. Confidential very much in the realm of.
Yeah, but I mean, you look at movies of Chris Nolan, I think you see a huge noir influence in his films. If you look at David Lynch, I think David Lynch is a guy who has extended the themes that you see in film noir. He is nothing you see in his movies would lead you to believe, oh, he's doing film noir. But his is a logical extension of a lot of the, because noir gets into the interior lives of people who know they're doing the wrong thing and they do it anyway and all that. And a picture like Lost Highway is all about that internalization of the dark side of human nature. That's what David Lynch does better than anybody, really. So in his way, movies like Mulholland Drive and Lost Highway and you know, the Twin Peaks things, to me, are all extensions of classic noir that don't need to emulate classic noir. And I see it in other filmmakers as well. The other thing that I think is valuable to realize is, you know, noir is very minimalist. You don't need a lot to make a film noir. I always joke that you need a man, a woman, and a locked hotel room, and then you can make a film noir. Jean-Luc Godard used to say, you know, a man, a woman, and a gun, and you're there.
You got it.
So I think you see a lot of young filmmakers are drawn to noir scenarios because they're easy to shoot. You know, you don't require a big cast. They take place at night in darkness. They're marginalized lives. So I think when you look at the films of a lot of contemporary filmmakers, you're going to find a noir early in their filmography. That's just my belief.
Eddie, is there a film that is part of the Festival of Film Noir that you're curating, which is you think is going to be a particular treat for Seattle audiences, maybe because it hasn't been seen as often as some other film noir that you're particularly excited about showing to folks?
Well, I hate to tell you this, Ross, but it's everything that we're showing this year because this is a very eclectic program that we've put together this year. None of the films are like any of the other films in the series. So it's hard to say, well, if I saw this, then I can miss that. I mean, there's a real breadth of stuff that we're showing this year. And I'm not in the least bit embarrassed by playing kind of fast and loose with the definition of noir to include some of the films that we're showing. Like we're showing pre-code movies, you know, no scholar is going to say these are film noir.
This would be pre-1935.
Yeah. One is from 1931, one is from 1933. A House Divided is a very early William Wyler film that, you know, it isn't really film noir, but so what? I mean, I don't really care at this point. I mean, it's a very, very provocative film. You can see roots of film noir, and in some ways, you know, we're now attracting an audience that comes to these movies like, wow, you can still go out and see old films in a theater in 35 millimeter. That's interesting. And noir attracts them. Then when you show them something that has elements of noir but isn't exactly film noir, I think it actually helps to define what noir is. You know, sort of the exception that proves the rule kind of thing. So, you know, I will take any opportunity to show a rare film, to resurrect a rare film and show it. I mean, The Kiss Before the Mirror that we're showing with House Divided is a virtually forgotten movie by James Whale, who prior to this film directed Frankenstein and after this film directed The Invisible Man. Now, he is, you know, of course, he's known for Bride of Frankenstein and Showboat, among, you know, but nobody knows about this film, which is a really adult, sophisticated crime drama that was shot on the sets where he made Frankenstein. I mean, it's incredible. It's like you look at the jails and it's like, my God, this is a dungeon. I mean, who actually puts somebody in a jail like this? You know, it's like, well, oh, now I get it. This is where they shot Frankenstein.
Eddie, does the czar of noir ever just get sick of noir and go, I just want to watch some musical comedies to get it out of my brain cell?
Of course. I mean, I have a full, rich life outside of my role as the czar, but I always come back to it because there's an endlessly fascinating storyline in all of this, something that I'm very interested in right now that I'm uncovering as I go around looking for missing films is the whole international aspect of this. And, you know, this is our seventh year in Seattle, right? I've done it for 11 years in San Francisco and even longer in Los Angeles before it was called Noir City. It was a separate festival. The belief is that film noir is a Hollywood phenomenon. And there's a European influence because, as I mentioned, of those filmmakers that came across the Atlantic to make movies in Hollywood. I'm now learning that there were films like this being made contemporaneous with the Hollywood films during that era. I mean, I've seen movies from Argentina from 1949 that are film noir based on works by American writers. I've seen films from Italy, from you know, France, Japan, Mexico, India, that were all made in this same era. And a lot of these films have never been shown in the United States. So, I mean, this is a direction that I'm definitely going in because it shows, it kind of gives the lie to the belief that noir was a completely American phenomenon.
So maybe next year the festival will include some movies with subtitles?
At some point, that is going to happen. I mean, that's my goal, is to have an international Noir City festival.
He is the czar of noir, Eddie Muller, founder and president of Film Noir Foundation, filmmaker, and his books include Dark City, The Lost World of Film Noir, and he's curating the Seattle International Film Festival's Noir City, which kicks off this evening. Thanks, Eddie.
You're very welcome. Thank you.